I would be 100% okay to be out of a job because there was not
right.
a need.
If only your services
But I know
needed.
That's not a goal that's obtainable
yeah.
because abuse is always going to happen because a lot of people don't think this happens. And it happens. It happens in all families. It happens in all economical levels. It happens in all ethnicities, all areas. Nobody is immune to this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly why the Children's Justice Centers were created. We were created for a safe place for kids to come and tell their stories.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they've developed to move forward and live their best lives. I'm Jenny Taylor.
And I'm Michelle Scharf. Today we have with us our guest, Julie Stevenson, from the Children's Justice Center in Davis County. I work with Julie. I'm on the Friends Board, which is the fundraising arm for the CJC. We'll refer to the CJC, which stands for the Children's Justice Center. And Julie Stevenson is the director, and we're super excited to have her on. I will say, if you're listening in your car with children, we are going to be covering critical topics today, conversations that should be had. However, they will cover sex abuse, abuse, mostly with children, and also human trafficking. So welcome, Julie.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
You have a heavy job. You work with people on some not their best days.
No. Yes. Hard days, but good days. It's a hard topic, but I've loved my job and I get to meet some incredible, resilient kids and their families.
Oh, that's awesome. I know you love the job. You're passionate about it. You really care about it. I've enjoyed working past year with you on the Friends of Side board, and it's been just a lot of joy. I've learned a lot of things sitting in those board meetings, and you know, we cover a lot of hard topics. So talk to us a little bit about what kind of people are coming into the CJC. What kind of services do people come to the CJC for?
People come to the Children's Justice Center or the CJC. We serve victims of physical or sexual abuse, and there's a wide range on both of those from age 17 down to zero. Of course, a baby and sometimes up to three, they're nonverbal or limited verbal skills, but we still have resources and support and help that is available at the center.
Wow. So if they're nonverbal and they're zero to three, how is it getting reported?
So anybody in the state of Utah it's actually the law. It's a Good Samaritan law. We're all over the age of 18 responsible to mandatory report if you suspect any type of child abuse. And so people report in a lot of different ways, whether they've seen it with our littles, like we were just talking about. A lot of times that's bruising, behavior changes, with diaper changing, some suspect that something doesn't look right. So anybody can report, but the majority is reported by a family member, somebody in the school, somebody that the
so like
kid,
a daycare maybe.
Daycare. And then when they get older, when they're in school or extracurricular activities or telling a friend. And so it can be reported that way, but anybody can call in a report to the Division of Family and Human Services.
And that's just heartbreaking to think of a little. It's heartbreaking to think of a 5 or 6 year old, a 17 year old, any age. So how does somebody make a report? Maybe I'm a teacher or something. I see things that have me concerned in a child. What would I do? Where would I go to try to make that report to hopefully get help for that child?
The place that you need to report to is the first place to report would be to the Division of Child and Family Services. That's where all reporting of abuse of children goes into. Or you can report to law enforcement in the city that you live, but it's either law enforcement or the Division of Family Services, which is DCFS is the acronym for that. And so they have a hotline that's 24 hours. And the number for that is 1-855-323-3237. And like I said, that line is open 24 hours. And so if there's any type of suspected physical or sexual abuse, that includes neglect, mistreatment, can be called into that number. When somebody calls in to report, they will ask you, you know, some questions. They do ask for your name, but one thing that is also good, because sometimes it is hard to call and report, because a lot of our perpetrators are somebody that we know and trust to the 90% of that.
90%? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Wow. So when you call in, that can be a hamper, you know, to report, because what do you do? But as humans, and I know it's hard, but it's the right thing to do, and mm-hmm. it's the law to report. And mm-hmm. by calling DCFS or law enforcement, it's our obligation to do that. But you also have the ability to do it anonymously. Okay. You can still report and choose not to give your name, and they still take the report, and it's taken as serious. It doesn't hamper the investigation or anything like that. But sometimes that can be a reason for, you know, somebody that wants to wait and see, or they're scared about reporting, that you can call an anonymous too.
Okay.
So those are that's how it gets reported. That's how it can come to the CJC.
But even when it gets reported, is it possible that even if you gave your name, that the DCFS isn't going to share that with the family? Or
no, the person that calls and reports it is protected. It's mm-hmm. not in any report that goes to anybody else except the DCFS. Mm-hmm. Even we don't know who the respondent was when they come to our center. There's a discussion when they get there, because we need to make sure who's bringing the child, and that person isn't a suspected perpetrator. But yes, even if you do give your name, it is not on any official, it's not on anything that goes forward beyond the report.
So
in the center,
this is just a genuine question. Do you get false reporting? Do you get misreporting? And how do you distinguish or determine if what's being reported is real or understated or overstated, or that's maybe the investigation process?
Right. And there is a myth out there that there's a lot of false reporting, not just with child abuse, but with any type of abuse. I've been doing this for close to 20 years, and that is a big myth out there that people are making it up. Mm-hmm. Or a child will disclose, but then they'll do what is called recant. They'll right. recant and say, oh, never mind, it didn't happen. But just because a child recants what they said does not mean it didn't happen.
Sure.
So there is statistics out there. The FBI has done a statistic of a false report, and it's 2-5%.
Wow.
Which is the same amount of false reporting of mugging. So when it comes down to it, there's a myth out there that a lot of people false report, but statistically and realistically, it's a very low percentage.
So if they come to you, if someone's brought to you because a report has been filed, 98% of the time, there's really something awful
going
happening.
On. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you have found some that ended up being released because maybe you found that there wasn't anything here.
Right.
So that does happen. So in those cases, what happened? You report back to DCSF and you say, we don't see abuse here.
Well, when it's reported, for them mm-hmm. to be able to come to Children's Justice Center, which any center, so there's 26 CJCs throughout the state. There is a CJC available to every county in our state, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's taken a lot of work. And, you know, in the past, when there's been two or three with children or adults, sometimes you have to travel 2 hours, 5 hours, 7 hours to get medical help or to report something. Mm. And the Children's Justice Centers have really taken it on, and the communities have come together, and every county has a CJC.
There's access to one nearby. Mm.
So when you make a report to DCFS or to law enforcement, they do open an investigation, and both of the DCFS and law enforcement's investigation looks different, but the main focus is to find out what happened and to make sure that this child is safe. That's everybody's first
right.
goal. And so when they come to the CJC, we don't take walk-ins. We can't. Mm-hmm. The way an interview is set up, it has to be scheduled by CPS or by law enforcement.
Okay.
And so when they come to us, then a case is already opened. And then they come to the center, for the services that we have.
So can I ask, how did you get involved in this? You said you've been doing this for 20 years, different capacities or maybe different organizations that you're striving to the same goal. How did you get involved with this as like kind of your path or your profession?
Well, I went to school and got a degree in social work and always have enjoyed working with people. And I had the opportunity of working in at a shelter that was close by my home, and it started out with volunteering. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to know a little bit more. Myself has not experienced domestic violence. I have been a survivor of other things, and I think that we find a lot of people in our profession has some type of link to what we do.
Yeah.
And it really started with, there was a part-time position in their transitional housing, and I went down there, got hired the next day, and then got to learn what was happening within a mile of my home of what a shelter looks like, a crisis shelter for victims of domestic violence or physical or sexual abuse. And from that point, I joined it, got the certifications that you need to work with sexual abuse. To be an advocate, you do need to receive some training and the certificate, and worked on crisis teams that takes a lot of volunteers in this work. And from that point on, I was at a particular shelter for several years, and then I moved to the Utah Coalition Against Sexual Assault, which is statewide services. They don't do direct services, but we train advocates. Sure. And then now I'm at the Children's Justice Center there in Davis County.
Yeah.
It's just a passionate. Yeah, it's just passion.
Thank you for that. Yes. I imagine you've seen a lot of change and hopefully positive change in the resources available in the 20 years you've been working, but maybe that's not true. I would hope the system's improving, and like you said, there's at least more of the justice centers available. 20 years is a long time to be in a field and see what happens.
There's been a lot of progress. I was just thinking this over this last year of a mile mark in my life, and would hope to see, I would be 100% okay to be out of a job because there was not
right.
a need.
If only your and, services
but I know
needed.
That's not a goal that's obtainable because abuse is always going to happen. But there has been progress. It is baby steps. And one thing you learn in this field is that you're grateful for every movement forward, and really getting involved with legislation, learning about what's happening in your community. What do your representatives believe? And really go out and train, because a lot of people don't think this happens. And it happens. It happens in all families. It happens in all economical levels. It happens in all ethnicities, all areas. Nobody is immune to this.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people want to categorize it that it only happens in a certain place, a certain section of people. But it happens to everybody.
Yeah. We need to take a break. When we come back, I think that that's a great thing to start with, is what are the numbers that we're seeing in Davis County? We'll be right back. Back. Julie, tell us about, what are the numbers of abuse in our state? Like, statistically, where are we at?
One out of every three girls will be abused in their life, and two out of every five boys. And that should be alarming to everybody.
It is.
Because those numbers show that if it hasn't happened to you or your kids, it's happened to somebody you know and care about. And statistically wise, it will happen. And those are based on reported numbers. And sexual and physical abuse is the most underreported crime. And so those numbers should be shocking, but
they're
realistic
just a drop in the
is that there's survivors out there that haven't come forward.
Yeah. Well, I'm even thinking about raising my children. I had an incident when one of my sons was three with a neighbor, and we went and addressed it with the neighbor. It wasn't, we'll talk about this later. I can tell you what it was. I won't say it on the air. But and I was so alarmed by it, and I addressed it with the family, and then we put barriers in place for that child and my child. And then that family, you know, didn't appreciate that and try to you know, create problems. But so I think it does happen. Like, I never even considered that that was something to call the police about, because it was a child acting on a child, right? And so I think you're right. It's most likely really underreported.
Right. And for that reason, too, is mm-hmm. that you don't think about calling law enforcement, right? Somebody that you mm-hmm. know, somebody that you trust, mm-hmm. and think that.
And I thought that and like we could you, handle
that
it.
You, and that you could handle it. And mm-hmm. a lot of times you feel that way. But setting up barriers and things like that, getting the resources that you need, and no matter if it's a child on child mm-hmm. or an adult on a child or an adult on adult, it still needs to be reported. And a lot for that is for the services that can be obtained, and that you're not in that on your own, and that your child is heard. And that's our mission at the Children's Justice Center, is that every child's voice is heard.
Yeah, I love our mission. And this is going to be a part of a three-part series. And one of the women that are coming on to share their story is going to talk exactly about that. They're going to talk about the fact that as a child, they were abused and acted upon. And then multiple times in her childhood, she wanted to come forward and her family just said no. No. And so she wasn't heard, and she wasn't even heard from her own parents, and what that in turn did. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to address the fallout of that with somebody else that has, you know, had that experience. And then we have somebody else coming on to talk about advocating and getting a long sentence. I have some friends right now currently, and they have people sitting in jail waiting for sentencing, and there's all kinds of, you know, plea deals, and, you know, well, they admitted it, and so now what are we going to do, and, you know, whatnot. I'm really shocked at the low time served for child abuse cases in our state.
Yes, and they should be shocking. And like we were talking about earlier, things have changed and improved. Prosecution rates are getting higher, mm-hmm. But there's a lot of challenges to that. And just because a case doesn't move forward, and mm-hmm. that could be a whole difference, a whole nother segment on your own to talk about prosecutors. Yeah. I've worked with a lot of prosecutors. We have a very strong prosecuting group for Davis County. That's who I work with right now, mm-hmm. who really do take forward. But there's a lot of different reasons why a case doesn't move forward, but it does not mean that something didn't happen. They do have, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt, and sexual abuse it can be really tricky, but that's why we need more reports and more people coming forward so that we can take more cases on. And mm-hmm. that's one thing that the Children's Justice Center does, is that the services that we provide there, there's evidence to show that kiddos that come through a CJC, there's higher prosecuting rates because of it, because of the format and the procedures that what the CJCs do.
So let's talk about those services.
Sure. So when something's reported, law enforcement or Child Protective Services calls and schedules an appointment. When some kiddos report right away, we've talked about different reasons how they're, you know, whether they saw something, or some kiddos don't report right away. We have a lot of delayed reporting, which falls into those myths that, well, if it happened to me, I would tell somebody right away. Well, until it happens to you, you don't know, first of all, how your body's going to respond. Our brains, our amygdala is trained to protect us. And sometimes what it does is it files it back. And some kiddos don't have the capability to disclose.
Right. They can't even process it, right?
So maybe
they kind of put it back in the file of like, did not happen.
Right. And then one day they're ready to talk, or it comes forward. And so if a kiddo discloses and they say that it happened 6 months ago or 3 years or 20 years ago.
There's no statute of limitations, right?
So that's one thing that has changed over the years, is that we don't have a statute of limitation.
So now, someone gets to the point in their life, they feel they have the courage or the access or whatever to report.
Right now in the state of Utah, we do not have statutes of limitations on sexual abuse. Now, if it happened during the years that we did, there are limitations, but it doesn't mean to not report mm-hmm. because of the services that there might not be a legal side that can happen. But there can be
you can still
help with healing. Mm-hmm. And whether it happened 6 months ago, 5 years ago, 20 years ago, services are there. And yeah. that's why we're there.
I think a lot of times people are just so afraid to report because they just see it as a legal problem and police involved. And that all sounds really scary. Mm-hmm. But people don't realize that there are real services available to really help with the trauma side for the victim.
Right. And that's exactly why the Children's Justice Centers were created. We were created for a safe place for kids to come and tell their stories. So when the appointment's made and you walk into our center, you're greeted by staff that is very trauma-informed. We have a waiting room. We have snacks and toys. A lot of Children's Justice Centers, the Davis County Children's Justice Center used to be an old home that was renovated. Mm. Now, thanks to our county, we have a beautiful building, but it's still, we still make it comfortable and homey.
You want them to feel comfortable.
So the minute that they walk through the door, we have a fish tank, and I talk to survivors that have come in years ago and they come back with donations. And one thing they do remember is the feeling that they had when they walked in. They remember the fish tank and they remember the blanket that they received on the way out. So they'll come into our center. And like I said, we're child friendly. It's comfortable. There's treats. We have kid channels in the waiting room so that it can be as calming as possible.
Yeah. It's got to be nerve-wracking to go there, whether you're being taken by a family member or a social worker. I can't imagine for those kids, you know.
And a lot of kids feel like they're in trouble, that they did something wrong. And so the first thing you want them to know is that they're safe and they're not in trouble. Oh. And so they come to our center and we work as a multidisciplinary team. What that means is that we work with child protective services, law enforcement, prosecution, medical, advocates, and we all are on the same page. And so they're all involved, but we all are on for the same purpose of making sure, number one, this kid is safe, physically safe, and also provide some mental health resources for them and their families.
So all of those professions you mentioned in the multidisciplinary team, mm-hmm. are you all in the state of Utah employed by the county? Is that kind of who hires that team and oversees that team? Or do you bring them in maybe from a hospital or a counseling center to the CJC? How is the structure?
So the structure is, Child Protective Services is a state service. And so that staff is, they're hired by the state, but every county is assigned caseworkers.
Okay.
And so we have certain caseworkers that are assigned to do, in our example, for Davis County.
Sure. And that location mm-hmm. for the families that are near enough that that's where they would drive to or.
Right. And same with law enforcement. They're hired by the county. And so all the cities in Davis County, you can use our center.
Okay.
And then we do have 3 days a week at our center. We do have two nurses. We collaborate and coordinate with Primary Children's, and we do have two certified nurses on staff and a full medical facility in our center so that they can get the health care that they need. So we do have that. So when they come into our center, they're welcomed in, and then the child will be interviewed by a forensic interviewer. We have two on staff that's their full job, but law enforcement and CPS do get certified in forensic interviewing. So they come in and they will be interviewed by our forensic interviewer. And I have to say, we have great ones, but they're all great throughout the state. But we have a really good team. They go in and they meet the child in the waiting room and introduce themselves and take the child back. We have interview rooms, again, that are comfortable. It is being recorded. Every one of our rooms is set up with recording devices, which is going to be audio and visual, which is evidence, right? It's a forensic interview. But the way that the forensic interview is set up is, again, that trauma-informed. It's a neutral, unbiased interview. And so our forensic interviewer does have certain questions that they need to ask, but they only can go on with what the child discloses. And the child has full control when they walk in that room. And so they get interviewed. And while they're being interviewed, we have victim advocates that will work with the caregivers that brought them. And we provide resources for so in our center, we don't have therapists on site, but we do have agreements and we work with several different agencies throughout the county that provide mental health treatment that we can give them resources and referrals to. And also a big part is to sit down and do some crisis intervention and just listen, because the child is there and is getting focused on. But a lot of times caregivers need those few minutes to, maybe they sat in the room and they cry for a couple minutes, and that's okay. That's why we're here. And to talk about feelings and emotions, and that they're going to have all type and some validations of what they're feeling, because we want them to feel supported and to get the help they need, because they're going to be helping the child. Mm-hmm. And so it's full circle.
Right.
And we also, like I said, we do medical exams at the center. So it's all encompassing. So you don't have to go over. And like I said, the forensic interview is recorded. And a lot of times, so when the case moves forward, that is evidence and can be used in the if it's taken on for prosecution. Mm-hmm. A lot of times that interview, because the main goal for that is that the child doesn't have to tell their story over and over again, because over the years, that's not been the case.
Yeah.
When I first started, they would have to talk to Child Protective Services, and then they have to tell their story to law enforcement. Then they have to tell their story to another person and another person. And what the CJC does in the forensic interview is the child only has to tell their story once, and everybody hears it. And that is a huge movement forward and such a great thing of why the CJCs exist and the purpose of doing that, because that is trauma informed, because it's re-traumatizing to tell your story and it's exhausting. So we do that. It doesn't guarantee that the child doesn't have to take the stand, but the majority of the time, the forensic interview is enough. It's not a guarantee, but at a lot of times that will serve that purpose with the good thing.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay, so we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. We're back. So all of these services are offered. You have a child come in. How long is the overall time on average? I know, according to maybe how involved their trauma is, how many times they had been abused. I mean, that can really vary, because that would change, and how forthcoming the child is into all of that, right? So that could really change. But kind of what do you see as an average process for this? Is it an all day thing? How does that work?
And that's a really good question, because a lot of times too, parents don't how do you schedule that? And so it's usually, on average, we say to plan on at least 2 hours for the interview. If a medical is needed, then again, to plan on another 2 hours. So it could be a good portion of the day. Mm-hmm. But we always advise to at least plan on 2 hours. And like you said, sometimes it's over in 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. If the kiddo is not ready to disclose, they are not forced to disclose. We don't want that to happen. That doesn't help the child, number one, for mm-hmm. sure. And it doesn't help the case. And so sometimes kids come in and they're not ready. They're not the ones that disclosed. Maybe it was found and reported by somebody and they didn't even know why they were coming in. Mm-hmm. And if they're not ready, then we just make sure they get the resources of people that they can go talk to or take the time, and they can always come back. And they're not in trouble and nobody's mad, because they're not going to force anybody to talk about something that they're not ready to. And that's the nice thing about forensic interviewers, is the way that the interview is structured. And that's why they have to get certified and have to practice and also be reviewed, is so that it's really, like I said, the child has control in the interview. Mm-hmm. And at any time, if they want to stop, then it stops. But for the most part, once they get talking to our forensic interviewers, because the law enforcement and Child Protective Services are not there in the room, but they do monitor it from a different room, you can see their body language relaxes. And even though it's a hard topic and it's a hard thing to talk about, the way that it's asked and the power and control that they have in that room is something that they hadn't had or had taken away because mm-hmm. of the abuse. A lot of times they do talk. And sometimes it's fast, and sometimes they have a lot to say, and we let it go till they're done.
Wow. So one of the things that I was surprised at the board meeting is that there is human trafficking going on even in our county. So what do those cases look like?
We do have human trafficking of children, and we have it in our county. We have it in our state. Mm-hmm. It doesn't just happen far away.
But it sounds like it, right? Like right. We all think it's happening somewhere else, but not right. In our neighborhood.
Or
right.
Only in like really big, broken down ghetto cities.
Right.
You know?
Right. Like that's something not that happens in San Francisco.
Right.
Like it's not happening here.
No. Yeah, that happens in Utah. And
what does that look like? What does that mean, human trafficking of children? Like, can you give us some overarching examples of what that refers to for people listening that may not really understand?
Sure. Human trafficking of children could be the cases that we have seen also combines and goes along with sextortion, which is, you know, technology is great. Mm-hmm. Computers are great. But what we have seen a huge increase on over the last several years, you know, 2 to 3 years, there's a big increase of sextortion, which would be your child's online and you think that they're just playing a kid, and it is a kid game, mm-hmm. but there's every game has the capacity to have a chat box, and perpetrators are out there and they know, and they reach in, and a lot of times children think that they're talking to another 12-year-old where they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes from chatting into that particular area, mm-hmm. to the person talking to them has them change platforms, mm-hmm. whether Facebook, Snapchat, things like that. And they get on there and talk. And a lot of times they'll talk them into sending pictures because they feel like they know this person, right? Our kids feel like they know the people that they have. They've shared lots of things. And perpetrators of this type of abuse know exactly where they know exactly
the groomers.
What to do.
Right? Yeah. And they're good at asking questions and getting kids to talk about things like, what is the mascot at your school?
Right.
Oh, now I know your location.
Yeah, and our kids share a lot. That's you know, with social media, location devices on, pictures. But they'll share. They'll get them to feel comfortable and share a picture. And then all of a sudden, they turn over and say, if you don't send this much money, then I'm going to send this to all your friends because they have all the access to their contacts. Or they actually meet up with that person. And then things happen. And mm-hmm. sometimes that happens over and over again. The kids go home, but they don't want to report because they don't want to be in trouble. And sex trafficking is another, it leads into that or can be part of that, right?
Yeah.
That person is looking for the child is just having a hard time and feeling lonely. And now they have somebody that's paying attention to them and they meet them somewhere. And then all of a sudden they might be taken, but they're doing it in their mind consensually. But a 10-year-old can't leave what you know you mm-hmm. you can't, and so that looks that way. Or they find online and they traffic them through state lines or traffic them right there in their own home with a parent that is the person that is trafficking them out,
which is so hard to believe that a parent could ever do that, but it does happen. Yeah, and it is happening, even in Davis County.
Yeah, I wish I could say that all perpetrators are in hoodies and wear dark sunglasses. And, you know, stranger danger is a really important thing and should mm-hmm. be taught. But we also need to teach our children and ourselves as adults that nobody can touch you. And it's not okay for anybody. And it's okay to tell somebody if something doesn't feel right and they're not going to be in trouble. Because statistically, it is going to be somebody that they know and trust. And to be able to learn, if they don't want to, they don't have to, and they can tell somebody and they're not going to get in trouble.
Yeah. It's alarming.
And that it's not their fault,
Yeah.
I
mean, they, like you said, if it's a video game and they think it was a 12-year-old kid playing the same Fortnite or whatever. And,
right. Yeah. Or if they consensually sent the picture, right?
Yeah. Right.
And they do feel like it's the end of their, we are losing kids through suicide because they do feel like it's the end of the world, but it's not.
Right.
And there is programs out there that help take pictures off, but it can feel that way. But as a society and as a community, through our teachers, through our coaches, through the adults in our children's life that they interact with, if they can talk and let them know that they can tell them, and they're not going to get in trouble, and that there is help, because there is help for this. But a lot of times kids are silent because they feel like they're going to be in trouble. And the big thing is that we need to let them know it's not their fault. They might have sent the picture. They made some choices that probably weren't the best choices. Mm-hmm. But even those choices aren't their fault. Coercion is a huge power. And we just need to let them know that it's not their fault and they're not in trouble and that there is help and that law enforcement and CPS are there to help, and we can, and that things will be okay eventually, right?
So this is all heavy and important, and like you said, these critical conversations. Can you tell us of some of the success that you see, the help you provide, the hope that you give, maybe those who do come through the services you have? Are you seeing the good that comes out of that? Do you have kind of that, here's the good news, even though there's a lot we've got to still work on?
Yes. Every day.
Every day,
whether it's, so we have a great community of donations. So when children come in, when they leave, they get to pick out a blanket and a stuffed animal. And that might not sound like a lot, but it is a lot, and it means a lot. It's something that's warm, that's caring. They get to pick it out. And we have survivors that have come through our center that will bring in donations. And the reason why they did is because they remember that blanket that they were given and they want to pay back. Or we do some follow-up and check in, and we hear that they're doing great in therapy. Or maybe they haven't got to the point that they're ready for therapy yet, but being able that they were heard and things at home have got better, and that the person hurting them is not contacting them anymore, and they didn't get in trouble. And they, a lot of times we see really good results with how they see law enforcement, that they might be scary at first, but they're actually there to help. And same with Child Protective Services. We have moms and dads and different caregivers that call and just let us know that they're doing good. Or sometimes their healing process is struggling, and after 6 months, they need some help, and we're still there, and there are services for that. And it doesn't mean that anybody failed. It just, the healing process looks different for everybody, and there's people to be there the whole way through. They're never alone.
That's awesome.
And the offer for help doesn't expire. Like,
no.
It will help you for this much time after you come in, but then you're on your own. If someone needs to come back, maybe revisit in a different mindset. We've talked about this a lot, Michelle, with especially children. Whatever you're grieving, the trauma, the difficulty, the loss, what have you, you revisit it at a different developmental stage in your life. So even though something maybe happened when you were 10 or 12, well, now you're 16 or 17, and in your mind, it could be re-traumatizing just going through developmental stages, even if no new incidents occur. So I'm grateful to know that they can, the door's open.
Yeah,
the door's
they can
open.
They can always call, they can drop in, and we'll make sure. And, you know, sometimes maybe what they started isn't working and they need something more intense, or they might need, you know, a different resource. And yep, our doors we're always available to provide those. And if we don't know the answers, we'll find the answers. They're not alone, and that we can help services, because that's one thing that we can do. And what our community has a lot of resources. And until something happens, you don't know what those are. And that's our main goal, is to provide them and connect them with those, and so that healing can begin.
That's awesome. So I serve on the Friends Board, which is the fundraising arm for the CJC. And our role is a little bit different. It's to raise money for some of the services that aren't covered under the state, county, or federal funds that you guys receive. And in doing so, we can sometimes offer secondary therapy for secondary victims, because it's not always just the child in the house that has some trauma.
Sure, right? It affects everybody, and therapy and insurance is great. Not everybody has insurance.
Right.
And mental health might not fit within the scope of their insurance. And there is some state funding that they can apply for, but people like our friend, like the Friends of the Davis County Children's Justice Center, that's why they raise funds, and we're able to use those funds, and we do use them. And it's not, and it's for our primary victim, but also secondary victims, and that's anybody in the immediate household, right? Because it affects more than that person.
Absolutely.
And there's some really great, you know, we are in Davis County, but I know throughout the state there's great service providers, but we have some really great service providers in the state that not only will help and work with our primary victims, but parents can go in, because a lot of times parents will talk to me and say, what do I say? How can I help? What can I do? And a lot of times they need some support. There's parenting groups within the county that helps provide services. And sometimes it's nice to go in a room and it might be scary to and intimidating even to a parent or a caregiver, an adult that's responsible for this child, but to walk in the room and realize they're not the only ones and that there's people that have gone through similar things and are, you know, have got support and the healing process, and that it's okay to ask for something even later.
Yeah. You know, I'm passionate about working with the Friends of Board. I was asked to come along. It was a perfect segue for me. I worked with the Child Protection Registry as a lobbyist here for a time and then retired from that. But that's where I learned about a lot of the stuff going on with human trafficking and our kids. And at the time, there was a young man in Davis County that took his life just for a scenario that you laid out. And I was just heartbroken over it. And I didn't actually really know about the CJC. I was working on this other arm. And I'm like, here I am in my own county. There's this amazing organization that actually will help support and get help for these people. And, you know, I was on the other end trying to educate parents, which sometimes is like knocking your head against the wall, because parents hand over these tablets and these phones so readily and easily, thinking no big deal, but they don't really realize that you've handed your child to the entire world. Mm-hmm. You think that you're handing over a convenience for you to reach your child, but you actually are handing the entire world to your child, right, and exposing your child to the entire world. And so, you know, I'm passionate about educating parents about that as well. I still talk about it to anyone who will let me talk to them about it. But I love being able to raise money and being able to support the CJC. I look forward to being able to be the president next year of the Friends of Board. Hope I do a really great job. It feels like a lot of pressure, but we're excited about it. This year, we've got some pickleball tournaments coming up. We've got some volleyball tournaments coming up. There's always opportunity to donate if anyone out there listening is interested in donating. You can reach out to us on the Friends of the Children's Justice Center on Facebook, or you can reach me directly. And also, we're always looking for board members, either direct board members or accessory board members, extra board members, to come do some heavy lifting and help us raise funds for these kids and for families in our community.
And you could do that no matter which community you live in.
Because
even if I don't live close to you, wherever I live, there's something in my county.
As a Children's Justice Center.
You can look up the Children's Justice Center in any county, whoever's
and
listening.
And I'd imagine even other states would have a similar something.
Yes,
right?
It is a national program. Some other states, so we're a CJC. Other states, like I was just in Dallas at a conference, and they have children advocacy centers.
Okay.
So they have CAs.
But no matter where you're listening from,
we're the same.
You can help in your community because the problem exists in your community,
no matter where you are. And there's always some organization out there that is willing to help. So you might have to do a little research to find it in your specific community, but in ours, and if you're specifically in Davis County, you can reach me personally on Facebook if you want to serve on the board itself and learn more. We also are willing to set up a time for tours to see the facility and really talk and go into more depth about the kind of work that we're doing. And it's pretty low volunteer hours, really, for volunteering to get a real great return. We have a 1-hour board meeting a month, and then it just is whenever we have a fundraiser itself to come do the heavy lifting and pick up some slack. So if anyone's interested out there, we'd love to hear from you. Julie, thank you so much for coming on today. Thank you for educating our listeners. So hopefully we'll be able to reach a lot of people here in Utah, but in other states as well. And if you're in another state, what did you say they're called in other states?
Children Advocacy Centers or CACs, but if you get online and you can do Utah Children's Justice Centers, we do have a main, the CJCs are covered by and in within the AG's office, and they have a wonderful website, and it's just, if you just Google Utah Children's Justice Center, it will lead you to that page. We have our Davis County Children's Justice Center, that also will lead you to other
make
resources
the connection
too, right?
Yeah.
And if you live in Utah now and something happened in a different state, that's another thing, is you can still come to the CJC that you closely live at. We do courtesy cases quite often, so that people don't, so you don't have to go back to the place where it happened. Yes, you can, any, or if you're at, if you're in Southern Utah, you can go there even if it happened in Davis County. The CJCs, we're also a family and we coordinate really well, and we can, you can get help anywhere.
Well, Julie, thank you for this, like Michelle called it, a very critical conversation. I think everyone listening probably has a lot to think about. Every time we have these conversations, there's some thought of, what am I aware of? Maybe what do I need to be a little more vigilant about? How can I try and help? And so to you, Julie, and all those who work with you and the work you do, thank you. Thank you for fighting for our kids and helping them find the voice to get the resources that they need.
Thank
it's been
you.
Great Thanks having you here today.
Having me here and for talking about a hard topic, but it's needed. So thank
it's
you.
Needed, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. If you like what you heard today, you can subscribe for free to our podcast. Give us a rating and a review. It really helps us be more prominent in the podcast directories, I guess.
The podcast world.
The podcast world. If you or someone you know has a real story about real life that you're willing to share, reach out to us. You can find us on Facebook or Instagram. On Facebook, you can just click that little box on the top of the header there to contact us. You'll be redirected to be able to schedule a 15-minute interview with me, and I'm happy to talk to you and see if you have a story about resiliency that would be a great fit for a show. So find us on Facebook or Instagram, Relentlessly Resilient.
And remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles other people are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day.
Have a great day.